Good evening. I will call the March 14th meeting of the Blue Ash City Council to order. And if you would all please stand and join me as we say the Pledge of Allegiance. And tonight, after we're done with the pledge, I'd like to have a moment of silence in honor of Sycamore Athletic Director Mark Hayden, who passed in an unfortunate accident yesterday. So. Thank you. Jamie, would you please call the roll?
Councilman Jeff Capel.
Here.
Councilman Lee Zerwanka.
Here.
Councilman Brian Gath.
Here.
Councilman Pramod Javeri.
Here.
Councilman Mark Serkin.
Here.
Vice Mayor Katie Schneider.
Here.
Mayor Jill Cole.
Here.
Seven present.
Thank you. Could I have a motion for the acceptance of the agenda?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Could I have a motion for the approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of February 8th, 2024?
So move.
Second.
Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Could I have a motion for approval of the minutes of the work session of February 22nd, 2024?
So moved.
Second.
Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Jamie, do we have any communications to council? How about reports from outside agencies? The mayor's report will be entered into the public record. And could I have a motion for approval of the financial report of February 2024, please?
So move.
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. And now it's time for hearings from citizens. And I know you guys are regulars here. And if you wish to speak, please just approach the microphone and state your name and address. And if you have any materials to pass out, please give them directly to Jamie, our clerk of court council. So please keep your comments to at least 3 minutes. Thank you very much. Peter, I'm guessing you would like to speak.
My name is Peter Norton. I live on Kenridge Lake. And I'm very happy to be here. A lot of the people that used to come and sit with me are now dead. So the only thing I have to say is don't die and you can keep coming to council meetings. And I'm looking forward to the closure of Kenwood Road. Just down the street from my house, it'll make life more interesting during the summer. And I would really like it if we knew when that was gonna happen, but I think Gordon is gonna hold that information close to the chest and not let anybody know until it's really ripe. But I think it would be a kindness to the citizens that drive up and down Kenwood Road to put a sign up saying that sometime this summer it's going to close for 3 months. And then they won't be surprised and you won't have angry mobs coming. Let them raise their fist at the signs. And since this is 2024 and there are lots of exciting things and electronics that go on, I would think a construction camera pointed at the site, running every 5 minutes or so with a little update. People from all over the county or the country could watch our new bridge under construction and being developed. And all you would need is a video camera and a radio transmitter and a little computer attached to it. It's just a cell phone in a box. And there are lots of used cell phones floating around. You wouldn't have to spend any money. I could pull one out of the dining room drawer. It's full of junk and lend it to the city for 3 months. I'd be happy to. So it's my great pleasure to be able to walk up here. And I just brought my cane along because it's so much easier to have something to hold on to get out of these lower chairs. But otherwise, I'm doing just fine. And if you need a new hip, have courage. It's a piece of cake.
Thank you, Peter. Anyone else, Denise? Okay, we will close the hearings from citizens. Next, we'll move on to committee reports. First up is Finance and Administration Committee. Lee Zerwanka, chairperson.
Thank you. First off, I have an ordinance. Jamie, please read ordinance number 2024-02 by title only.
Amending Chapter 174 of the Codified Ordinances, the City of Blue Ash Municipal Income Tax Code, incorporating required state laws changes as shown on the attachment and declaring an emergency.
Move to suspend the rules of council requiring a second reading. Second,
sorry.
Any discussion? Jamie, please read the roll call.
Councilman Serkin?
Yes.
Councilman Javeri?
Yes.
Councilman Gath?
Yes.
Councilman Capel?
Yes.
Councilman Zerwanka?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Schneider?
Yes.
Mayor Cole?
Yes.
7 yeses.
Move to adopt ordinance number 2024-02.
Second.
Any discussion? Like I said. Seeing none, Jamie, please call the roll.
Vice Mayor Schneider?
Yes.
Councilman Capel?
Yes.
Councilman Serkin?
Yes.
Councilman Gath?
Yes.
Councilman Javeri?
Yes.
Councilman Zerwanka?
Yes.
Mayor Cole?
Yes.
7 yeses.
Thank you.
Next, Jamie, please read resolution 2024-14 by title only.
Authorizing the city manager to enter into a multi-year collective bargaining agreement with the International Association of Firefighters, IAFF, Local 3203, Firefighters Bargaining Unit.
Move to adopt resolution number 2024-14.
Second.
Any discussion?
My only comment is just I'm glad we're in a city where we have excellent relations between the fire department and then the rest of everyone else up here. As we've seen in the news, it's not happening in 100% of areas, so I'm certainly glad we have that here.
Anyone else? Jamie, please call a roll.
Councilman Zerwanka?
Yes.
Councilman Capel?
Yes.
Councilman Gath?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Schneider?
Yes.
Councilman Javeri?
Yes.
Councilman Serkin?
Yes.
Mayor Cole?
Yes.
7 yeses.
Jamie, please read resolution number 2024-15 by title only.
Providing for amendments within the 2024 annual appropriation resolution number 2023-81.
Move to adopt resolution number 2024-15.
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, Jamie, please call the roll.
Councilman Zerwanka?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Schneider?
Yes.
Councilman Javeri?
Yes.
Councilman Serkin?
Yes.
Councilman Capel?
Yes.
Councilman Gath?
Yes.
Mayor Cole?
Yes.
7 yeses.
That's all I have, Mayor.
Thanks very much, Lee. Next, we'll move on to Parks and Recreation Committee. Katie Schneider, chairperson.
Thank you, Mayor. Jamie, could you please read resolution number 2024-16 by title only?
Authorizing the city manager to enter into a contract for architectural and engineering professional services associated with the Blue Ash Recreation Center pool renovation project.
Move to adopt resolution number 2024-16.
Second.
So this resolution is about the pool, the redesign, the replacement. So we received a overview a few months back. So this is the staff has chosen the company Brandstetter Carroll, which is really exciting. They have a lot of experience locally in the state of Ohio, and they actually did the
baby pool,
which so we have direct experience working with them and can see what a fabulous job they did. So. Any other discussion?
I'm really glad we can use the same outfit because the baby pool is fantastic.
Katie, the
resolution provides for 8% based on construction costs, and then it has hourly rates.
8% contingency? Is that?
A percentage fee of 8% based on construction costs. So can somebody explain? I don't understand.
Yeah, that 8% is pretty standard what we see for design fees in general. We have an allotted amount in our budget for this year that's already pre-funded, and they will give us a new estimate when we eventually pick out a true concept to move forward with. But it will be 8% of the total project costs.
So if it's 8% of the total project cost, that makes perfect sense, or an hourly rate makes perfect sense. I don't understand both, or?
Well, we don't have a total project cost yet in place.
So hourly until we get to there, and then?
Yeah, they're giving us their hourly fees for design, and then when we get to a total cost of the entire project, it'll roughly be about 8% of the total project.
Yeah, perfect.
That's very typical. All of our other contracts have been the same.
Yeah, that.
Yep.
Perfect way to cost it. I just got confused.
Yeah, sure.
Else? Jamie, please call the roll.
Councilman Gath?
Yes.
Councilman Zerwanka?
Yes.
Councilman Javeri?
Yes.
Councilman Capel?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Schneider?
Yes.
Councilman Serkin?
Yes.
Mayor Cole?
Yes.
7 yeses.
Thank you, Mayor. That's all I have.
Thanks. Thank you, Katie. Next, we'll move on to the Public Works Committee. Brian Gath, Chairperson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ms. Seifert, will you read resolution number 2024-17 by title only?
Authorizing the city manager to enter into a contract for the 2024 Kenwood Road Bridge reconstruction for the unit prices as shown on the attached bid summary.
Thank you. I move the adoption of resolution number 2024-17.
Second.
This is the replacement for the bridge on Kenwood Road just south of Pfeiffer Road. And the cost of this is offset by a grant from the Ohio Public Works Commission. $300,000 of the budgeted $850,000 will come from them. The rest are public match. Are there any questions or discussion? Mr. Perry, it's not a state secret as to when this will happen, but you can't set the dates until we've chosen someone to do that. Do we have a thought as to how long this will take once it begins, and what the communication plan is?
So we have the next step is to meet with the contractor. So the award tonight, we'll have a pre-construction meeting with the contractor where they'll provide us their tentative schedule, and then we can advertise that information to the public. The intent is by our specification that we intend them to build it over the summertime. But we have to get with them and make sure that all their materials and everything will make that possible.
Very good. Thank you. There's nothing else. Mrs. Seifert, will you read the roll call?
Councilman Capel?
Yes.
Councilman Zerwanka?
Yes.
Councilman Gath?
Yes.
Councilman Javeri?
Yes.
Councilman Serkin?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Schneider?
Yes.
Mayor Cole?
Yes.
7 yeses.
Thank you. Now we'll move along to miscellaneous business. How about David?
Yes, so at the last workshop we had, one of the priorities you identified is the economic development workshop. The priorities you identified was revisiting the master concept plan in the neighborhood of Summer Park. There was a suggestion that we bring the developer back, have a conversation, and help understand what that redesign might look like. I had initially tried to have a conversation, I had initially targeted the second March meeting for us to do a workshop with the developer and his team to go through that process. It's a little bit unstructured at this point. However, several of his team identified that that's also opening day for the Reds, and so they will not be available. So I think at this point we will be targeting a second April meeting for that, and so I'll confirm that by the first April meeting at the latest. But tentatively, since they really kind of wanted to do it in 2 weeks, but because of the delay, they definitely would be very likely to be April 25th, I think is what that date is. So That's where that is. Secondly, I'll throw this to Kelly, but just to restate it, if you recall at the retreat, there was a brief discussion at the end of the retreat about sustainable efforts and what have you, to provide a brief synopsis of where we're at. One particular project that isn't really in our bailiwick, so to speak, but as part of the Madtree project, they wanted to and have done a lot of engineering to cost, and we'll cover some of it. A couple of chargers, I think it's four chargers, running the electric and all that. We've identified, and not us, but there is a federal grant to help pay for that. So in the course of that, we said, okay, let's try to buy down that cost for them since they have a lot of other costs of their own. Councilman Gath, who is on the OKI board, is very excited about that and has brought up they should be contemplating other ones. And so I think for Kelly and Gordon, before they spend a lot of time and energy into it, we want to kind of have a conversation about the pros and cons of what that might look like from our standpoint, because I think this is an area where we don't want to be presumptuous and do things or not do things without having council's discussion on there. And I think I would start with where I get the big picture of EV chargers and what have you. I think we need to discuss what's the benefit, what are you getting out of it, the ongoing maintenance and what have you. But I'll let Kelly and Gordon go from there. So.
Thanks, David. So just to restate what Madtree's doing, so in partnership with them, we are applying for this grant. Only a local government can apply, Madtree cannot. And originally, the grant was to fund 80%, and Madtree would fund the local match of 20%. Good news, OKI said that we've got plenty of extra funds, which is a little telling. People aren't applying for these things. I'm not sure why. But they now will cover 100% of the grant, and Madtree said, great, awesome. And they're doing all the heavy lifting. It's their engineers and their architects working with Duke Energy and figuring out how to do it. And they're also going to eat the cost of the electric for those four stations, those folks that want to charge at Summit Park. They wanted to do the slow charge, not the fast charge, because they want folks who are coming to patronize their facility as well as the park. So it's not going to be the quick charge, 15, 30 minutes and you're out. It's going to be a couple of hours. And we thought that made a lot of sense. So, you know, thinking about if we were to expand this to other locations in Blue Ash, I think we need to consider, you know, who our audience is. Presumably residents are charging at home, so I'm not sure if it's for residents, maybe for folks visiting from out of town. We'd need to figure out, you know, where we can afford to lose parking. Parking's always a premium in Blue Ash, and the fire department has come up with some new safety regulations where it would take 1.5 parking spaces per charger just to make sure that if we had to put out, you know, one of these electric vehicle fires, that we have the room to do so, and that also the fire is not spreading to other vehicles. We would want to consider whether or not we're going to charge and what that cost is and what platform we use. And so there's a lot of things that we're not experts at yet, and I don't have a lot of answers for you as it relates to those specifics tonight. But if council's interested in pursuing more, you know, we'll certainly dive into that. We have until June, which is probably a little quick to get engineers on board to figure it all out, but we'll certainly try. I just wanted to make you aware of the opportunity. And, you know, as Gordon and I are aware, there have been opportunities in the past. I assume there will be more funding in the future. So, you know, saying no to this is not necessarily saying no to other chargers. In fact, we could just do it on our own time in the future as well as we learn more about how it works.
Wayne?
I mean, I'd just like to comment that I think this is very worthwhile looking into. Again, you did mention there's a lot of questions, there's a lot of research to do to determine these. I think it makes most sense, in my opinion, to put these in places where you do have folks traveling in from out of town, or, you know, residents don't really need, they'll probably use it, but they don't really, we don't need to target them if they can charge at home. But targeting areas like off the highway where people can come plug in and patronize a restaurant or something while they're waiting to charge while they're on a trip, or different areas like that. I, in my opinion, think we should charge for the electricity. I don't think, and then whatever the rate is in the market, but enough to cover, you know, our maintenance costs. I don't think this is a service at this point in time that we should be eating the cost of and offering, you know, for free for anyone and everyone. But.
Yeah,
Katie, you make a good point. It's kind of an old model. It used to be very common that an employer or a business would have one of these chargers for free sitting out in front of their business as a draw. This level two charger is something that charges in hours, not minutes. So if you need a charge, 4 to 10 hours to get up to 80%, which is how, you know, the level that most people want. So really, it's ideal for an employee of Madtree to charge while they're at work. Anybody who's at Madtree for 4 to 10 hours probably shouldn't be driving home their new charge car. If Madtree is willing to pay the electricity for it and do all that, I think it's a no-brainer to support them in that desire. I think we should consider, and it may not work out, but I think we should consider the idea of installing some DC fast chargers somewhere in the city. The DC fast chargers are more like a gas station in that it takes minutes, not as fast as a gas, filling up your gas tank, but minutes, so 20 to 40 minutes to fill up your car. The people that use those are two types of people. One, either somebody who doesn't have charging available at home. Maybe they're in a multifamily housing unit that doesn't have this available to them. Why'd they buy an electric car at that point? I don't know, but you know, they're very committed maybe. Or people who are coming through the area and need to charge. Where do you want to put those sorts of things? You want to put them someplace where there's bathrooms, where there's security, where there's food, and where there's entertainment, place to stretch your legs, close to an interstate. It becomes a draw for that location. People are coming to them. The folks at OK, I say that maintenance is absolutely something that you need to look at as you do this, but the way they're recommending that it be done is that you would put out a request for proposal, and one of the charging networks would come in and say, you know, here, you know, we're going to put it in, we're going to maintain it, we're going to operate it, we're going to charge for it, and any money that comes back will, you know, write you a check for. I think it's a low risk kind of thing. If the federal government really is paying for most of the cost, there are some engineering costs we'd have to pay for up front as we prepare the proposal. But the rest of the cost can be put in by the engineer. You got to maintain it and operate it for 5 years. At the end of 5 years, you could have it in the contract that they unbolt the thing and take it out, and all you got is conduit in the ground. So I think there's a low risk. I think that and there are questions that can't be answered here tonight. Namely, can the electrical network support it at Summit Park or Town Square Park or wherever else that it goes? That's a phone call to Duke and say, hey, can the network handle this? So there's probably a little bit of work that could be done to know whether this is feasible from an engineering standpoint. I think we really ought to look at this, because I think it's one more thing that can differentiate Blue Ash from our surrounding communities as we look at businesses coming in. We can say, hey, this is something that we have. You never know what dollars are coming down the road next. Kentucky has no, the Kentucky funds were all used up. Are there going to be more? I don't know. If you have a crystal ball and can tell, so maybe they're coming. I think it's something worth considering.
I have a mixed bag opinion on this. I do agree with Madtree. That's fine. That's on their dime, on their property, and they take care of that. That's fine. I don't think any municipality should be getting into this at all. It's not a municipality category at all. Getting into the business of energy, et cetera, I wouldn't put it on our park property at all. I certainly wouldn't put them, you know, anywhere else, frankly, at this point. The technology's just not there. There's no standardization of, you know, the connectors and all for the charging. It's just not something I think the city should get into. I just don't see it that way.
I just want to say, I completely agree with Dali. I don't think we should get involved in this, because I have seen so many individual gas pumps or those gas stations, they're applying to get the chargers. So if most of the people get their chargers, we don't need to have a charger in our premises. That's the way I'm thinking. And I have seen people talking about getting their charger into their gas stations most of the times. That's my feeling.
Okay. Anyone of you want to comment?
Yeah, I'm a little mixed on this as well. I mean, as far as the Mad Tree, yeah, let them do it, because it's, if it's going to be on the property that they're renting and they want to do the heavy lifting and the, take the costs, then there's no need to stand in their way on that. I am much more mixed on how much further we would want to go with it, especially like Lee said, is this truly a municipal government function or is this a private function? We don't have government gas stations where you can fill up your car for free. So do you do that for electric? I'm not so sure. If we did do it at all, I would say a small trial run at most, because then at least you're collecting information and you learn various things about what works and what doesn't work. And I'll close on it by kind of reiterating comments that I made 2 or 3 months ago about electric vehicles. I mean, obviously the specifics I raised on the topic 2 or 3 months ago are different than this exact one. But what I did raise did incorporate quite a number of problems with the whole electric vehicle situation right now. So that would give me some pause, and specifically the ones that would give me pause on this right now are, do these work in cold weather? Do they work in hot weather? How often do they break down? Can you easily fix it? These are all serious problems right now that are plaguing the electric vehicle industry. So that gives me pause as to, would we want to jump into this now, or if it was a yes, would we want to wait a couple years or 3 years and see if the technology has fixed a number of these issues?
Yeah, real quickly, I talked to a friend of mine who's had a BEV, a battery electric vehicle, for 6 years. So he's got a lot of experience, and he also knows about the industry and what's happening. And these are the things he said to be careful of. He says, number one, he said, you know, technology is constantly changing. There's at least 6 different interfaces between the batteries, the cars, and these chargers, and they all obviously don't work with each other. He said there's a problem with repair and maintenance on these charging stations because they're out in the elements, they're beaten up on. At any time, he feels that 25 to 33% of these stations are the chargers themselves are not working. There's a statistic that 20% of the people that go into an existing charging station leave because it's either busy or the ones that are working and opened do not work, not compatible with their car. So he said he thinks it's going to get better in the next few years, but I personally don't think that Summit Park is a rest stop. And if you have level 3 chargers, the fast chargers, those are people that are on the road on a trip most of the time. And I think those things should be right by the highway, and people get on, they go to the bathroom, they get a snack, they get a drink, and they want to go. I just don't see a level 3 charging demand at Summit Park. I don't know if I want people that are just on the road to come to Summit Park for 20 or 30 minutes. I'm not sure that that's great. I think it should be right by the highway. We've got 71, we've got 275, where these things might be more practical. That's kind of it. I love the idea of Madtree having a couple, you know, whatever it is, 2 or 4 level 2 chargers. I think they'll get used a little bit, especially if they're free. Even if people are going to save 50 cents, you know, there's people that will hook on to them while they're at Madtree or while they're at the park, and that's fine. But to do a level 3s, from what I understand, you really need to do 15 or 20 spots in order to have enough of them to make it really worthwhile.
The expert at OKI said 4 is probably more sustainable for the network, the electronic network. I mean, if you are putting in solar and batteries and you can, you know, from a commercially, maybe that's what you need to do. There were problems, there will be problems. The United States has recently set a standard connector. Some cars that were built 3 years ago don't have that connector, but new cars will have that connector. Many of them are having adapters made for them. The maintenance can be included in the request for proposal so that whoever bids on this could need to do it. It could be $1 million to put in 4 fast chargers. To have the federal government pay the $1 million to us is not something that I wouldn't even propose that we do that if we had still the 30% match. That would be a lot of money to risk. The risk here is very small. It's the whatever engineering cost that we would have to put it in to prepare the grant. But I think you all are very clear in your positions.
I just want to say that I agree with the others, that I'm really happy for Madtree that they want to do that. I just feel like the technology isn't quite there and understanding what the market is, what the need is. So, you know, I think it's something just not quite the right time. So,
a final question. Why is Madtree only considering the level 2 chargers, not the DC fast chargers?
I haven't spoken to them. They only have level 2 chargers at their property in downtown. I understand they're
Kelly may know.
Just because they want people to hang out and patronize their facility.
I believe there's a significant difference in infrastructure too on when you start getting into the, I think it's 440 amp, isn't it, for the level 3s?
The level 3s are a significant increase in the electrical usage. But the level 2s are much more affordable. So, I mean, as far as comparatively for installation. And so just to be clear, Madtree is going to install 4 with the ability to add 2 additional at the location. And also, just for clarity's sake, the Madtree locations are technically in our parking lot, which is adjacent to their facility, which is all part of, you know, the parking for the area.
Hey, Gordon, just for general definition, what are the big differences between charger level 1, 2, and 3?
The level 1 is, as far as I'm concerned, is just a home charging station. The level 2 and 3 in a commercial application is kind of what Brian Gath has suggested. It's the charge rate. So you increase the power for a level 3. It's much more power to the level 3 station. And it can charge your battery faster. So it's a matter of minutes as opposed to hours. It requires a little bit higher amount of infrastructure. So the electric usage is higher, but then again, it's a shorter duration. There is some information that sometimes the faster charge rates can actually start reducing the life of your battery. So a lot of people use the level 2, which is a slower charge duration. It doesn't put as much stress on your battery life.
I know a lot of people have level 2s installed at home, and I've heard it's $1,000, $1,200, $1,500, or give or take.
Well, commercial application for all of these
like a dryer circuit
is much higher. So a commercial application, from some of the information we had from some electricians, it's about $30,000 to $50,000 for the units, and that's, you know, installation, the equipment, the electrical power and so forth per each unit is what we were told.
And for level 2 is kind of quiet over there.
On a level 1 charger.
I'm just putzing along in my little diesel over here. I'll be okay.
Hey, Gordon, just to clarify though, at this point, we don't have the ability to do anything more than the 4 or 6 that Madtree runs, right? That's based on the ability running it from their facility.
That is running it from.
So we would have to run a whole new line. So your installation cost is, once a new electrical system has been brought in from wherever that transformer is nearby, and I don't know what that is. But
yeah, the ones specifically for Madtree are being fed from their transformer through their business, and it's part of their business operations that they pay for it. So they pay for the charging of their customers' cars.
But the grant would cover connecting the any other chargers to the network. And so obviously you don't want to put it in the middle of a field where you have to run it, but you know, and that's part of the question to Duke is, hey, where's this power available easily? There might be a need for a transformer there that would be covered by the grant. Level one is the plug behind you that you run your vacuum cleaner on. It takes days, 40 to 50 hours to fully charge a car. Level two is like the dryer circuit or the electric stove circuit at your house. It takes 4 to 8 hours.
120 to 220?
240. 208 if it's commercial, but 240 if it's at home. But and then level three is a DC charge, and the voltage goes 4 to 1,000, whatever you want to do, and it takes less time. But that's not going to impact any of your decisions. So,
Do you guys have what you need?
Yes, and I have a couple of other topics.
Okay. Are you done then, David?
Yeah. Just want to make sure. Are you clear? So we're sticking with the MAD tree one, and that's it?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Also in your packet was the memo from me regarding the cell phone tower. We've fully negotiated the lease, and these were the best terms I could get for us. And so I'm checking with council to see if you are agreeable to moving forward under these terms, in which case I will provide notice to the neighbors that this will be on an upcoming agenda.
Yes.
Yes.
Which neighbors will you notify, out of curiosity?
I'll just draw
that. Asking for a friend.
Yeah, maybe the adjacent, I don't know, 30 or so properties across the street on either side. If you have anything specific that you want me to put out, I certainly will. HOAs.
It is a fair question, because the criticism of why didn't I get the notice, but like some sort of okay, X number of feet around it.
Right.
It might not even be 30 or 40 properties, to be honest with you, because 50% of it's ours.
Right.
And so of a radius, you know, and so the other radius you're left with a handful across the street and then down Carpenter's Run. Well, there's only one down at that end of Carpenter's Run, so maybe a pretty big
list.
There
might be a few people down at that end. Like my neighborhood backs up to that, but
Kelly, it was described as a monopole.
Mm-hmm.
Is this similar to the one at the cemetery?
So it won't be a flagpole. It's not one of the stealth design. I mean, it's going to be a round pole, and then the antennas are on the external.
Okay.
But one distinction though, this will be skinnier. That what I understand. Remember that meeting we had? That flagpole is wider because they actually are putting different systems in it, and that's the idea. They were trying to hide the systems and they're limited to it, but this one they were going to try and do skinnier, and then they'll still hang hangers off of it. So by definition, it's you're going to see less of it. It's still a pretty big structure.
Well, I know that we've just heard a lot of community interest and support and wanting to have them, so I'm in favor of proceeding with it.
One of the most popular questions is when are you guys going to figure out a way to get better, get better reception?
Including here.
Yeah, if we're in a cell phone world, then you're going to need cell phone towers, so I'm fine with this.
Okay, great. Thanks. And then one more item. There's also a memo from Paul in your packet. This is a follow-up also from the economic development discussion specific to three hotel properties. And one suggestion from staff was if we want to get more serious about encouraging redevelopment at those hotel sites, perhaps we could broaden the permitted uses with an overlay district. And that would help take away some of the, you know, the mystery from a developer having to apply for a PD going through that lengthy and costly process. So if you have any feedback tonight or if you want to think about it, that's fine. But it was just a proposal and we threw a couple of potential permitted uses that aren't currently permitted on the list.
I think it's great. It's kind of like the CRA downtown to me. It's like you're giving incentive to get properties redeveloped. I think it's terrific.
Without having to invest our money into it, hopefully.
The question I have on the overlay district, so like at the bottom of this memo, there's six bullet points of possible uses. I assume we can pick and choose which one we want to include in there?
Yes.
Okay, that's great.
And just to reiterate, the process is, at this point, is you want to kind of just tell us, hey, what you're interested in. Then you actually draft legislation that you will then actually be the applicant, so to speak, and send it to the Planning Commission. Then it'll come back to you, and then you'll have a public hearing on it. Then you'll vote on it.
Sounds good.
Still a long process.
I support this. I like the idea of it. I think I can even, given where these are and what they're replacing, I think I can even get behind multifamily, residential, or townhomes. But I want some limits on it, and I'd look for some guidance as to what that is, either a density count or something, not however many and however high somebody can cram onto property. The other things seem to be self-limiting. You know, you can only make advanced manufacturing as big as the place. Does that make sense?
Density number you have, or a model you want us to point at?
I'd really like somebody who knows. I don't want to see a seven-story apartment building at any of those locations that we're talking about. So I don't know if it's height. You know, I understand that that's not good direction. It's not a good final direction. But what I'm saying is that I don't want to write a blank check. I'd like to put some boundaries on that one.
I would agree with that as well. So I like the idea of this, of making it easier. I'm still stuck on the red roof property and allowing a lot of these uses, because that area, while I understand it's right off the highway, it's a great stopping area for, you know, maybe a gas station or a car wash, but surrounding it on two sides at least, there's residential. And I just worry about allowing some of these things, you know, that butt up to Kenridge Lake and what's the other street that comes right next to the
Old
other
Pfeiffer.
Side?
Old Pfeiffer.
Old Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
Old Pfeiffer. And so I think looking at these, I don't know if it's necessary, you know, property by property or parcel by parcel, but just I'm still that property. I don't think some of these uses would be very popular. And then the multifamily residential, I support there, but again, limits. Just from experience on my street, knowing the 4900 went up and such a tall building so close to properties. I know you have more space there with Kenridge Lake, and so you could get a little bit taller, I think, without having such a massive impact, but I think we need to be careful in looking at that.
You know, one of the things I brought up on the Red Roof Inn particular property is we have all kinds of traffic issues right there with that curb cut, along with, and you cross over right there adjoining is the Montgomery City line. Right next to it is Tri-Health's curb cut. You know, I would recommend highly, and we've talked about this through the years, bringing Old Pfeiffer all the way down and eliminating those two curb cuts, taking that traffic back up to the light by Ursuline, and that would really help the traffic issues there. So, you know, as far as what goes on that property, you know, you can, I think we can decide and manage that to whatever extent. You know, you could see a gas station, you could see maybe even a drive-through restaurant, maybe even a car wash or something like that. I wouldn't make it too intense, given the fact you've got neighbors on the backside. And we had that conversation, frankly, years ago, if we all remember, with the downtown project, getting rid of the Thriftway and putting in apartments, you know, next to a residential zoning section. So you got to understand all that going into it. So
it sounds like we're going to have plenty of time to talk about it. Is that?
I do want to comment, Lee, from a playing some city kind of way. Yeah, that makes great sense from a traffic standpoint to bring both of those uses onto Old Pfeiffer. I will say that I think it's probably unfair to ask those six residential units to then take on all the traffic from whatever commercial use you're putting at the Red Roof property and all the traffic coming out of Tri-Health. I mean, there's a lot of cars that go through there, and to ask those residents to go from a dead-end street to heavy traffic, I think is a lot to ask.
Yeah, referencing some prior comments made by others, and including the question I had asked, I think we would have to look seriously about, first, whether multifamily residential, we would even want to include that as a permitted use in this district, and if so, definitely do the restrictions that other prior council members have mentioned. We have to remember, like, let's suppose, for example, we did a one-year zoning purge. We did, like, purge year in Blue Ash on zoning, where, like, anything goes for a year. We'd have 10,000 new apartments in the city. So, like, we know if we just give carte blanche to do multifamily residential on these sites, that's what you're going to get if you just let things play to their own devices. So we would definitely need to have some serious restrictions there if we included that in the district. And then as far as the Red Roof Inn, when we talk about the neighborhoods that border to the Red Roof Inn, make sure we're keeping in mind, like, the big key point here, that presently they are backing up to the Red Roof Inn. So if these other uses here, I don't think they're a step down. When right now you're in a neighborhood near a highway backing up to this hotel, it's the primary direction you have to go is up.
Not from a traffic standpoint, though. If you have a car wash there, for example, you've got cars in and out and in and out, in and out all day, as opposed to the Red Roof Inn is 30, 40 cars, and people are not, it's not a revolving door. So that's the only challenge that I'd make with that, is the revolving of traffic.
Yeah, I think the traffic would have to definitely be dealt with here.
Yes, so I think all the comments you made are really good. Unfortunately, what I would then say to counter all of those is the reason you're even in this position is because you don't like what's there now. You have so many constraints to get there now. You revise this to put all the constraints in, obviously just don't touch it and leave it the way it is now, in which you go through an arduous and normally very politically challenging PUD process where they can come to you with any idea, but it's fraught with all the challenges that you have. So you're really stuck with a hard, you have to, that's the hard job you have to do, but you're saying, we don't like this, and we don't like this, we want to put conditions on this, and I'm not saying carte blanche, but once you start doing that, that's kind of what you have already. And so then I'm saying, just don't bother with this exercise, and just recognize that. I think you need a few more conversations to get to that decision, but if you start honing, and I'm not saying this, because it's not even drafted, right, but in its present form, in terms of, hey, let's open it up for these key properties, we're not asking a lot of questions, that's the recognition that, hey, these things need some help. If you don't want to remove that regulatory burden, then you probably already have a process in place. So keep that in mind. Like, I wouldn't spend months tweaking this on these three uses of this and that. I kind of would just leave it in place the way it is now, in which they can do a PUD, and it's just a bare-knuckle affair, unfortunately.
So. I think out of the three properties that are mentioned here, probably the Red Roof Inn is the more complex. It's traffic, it's residents, it's, the other concerns. The other two, it works with the overlay completely.
I would challenge you a little bit on that. I think the Birch Hill property behind McDonald's, it might even be harder to put a, if Katie's example about car washes coming in and out, you ought to see that area at noon. Coming in and out of McDonald's and the Starbucks and all that. So add car wash, you would have all those same challenges there too. Well, maybe not if you put an apartment building or something like that. But
and if you look at the quality insight, you identified 5 acres there. How many apartments can you put in 5 acres? A lot.
Well, 4,900 is 10 acres. So to put it in perspective, so half the size of 4,900.
What was that number, or
270?
270. I mean, we're the blue is 250 apartments on 5 acres.
Yes.
With other uses on top of it. So I mean, without some kind of restriction, you could have a significant development there.
And I'm not arguing that. I'm trying to contrast to see you understand. By the time you
pick at it, and that's not a bad strategy because this is what you have to do. You may end up with something that's so watered down, you're like, just leave the PUD process in place.
Because from the developer standpoint, they have to do something that they can get financed and make money on. So that's our challenge. You know, if we limit it too much, as David says, people won't. And maybe that's what we do.
I think we all understand that we have three properties that we need to redevelop, and that's the goal. So it's going to be quite a bit more conversation, I think.
And it's not that it won't be hard or really, you know, what we would pick, but I just want to be real clear about what it is, what the possibilities are, so that we don't get surprised when, you know, somebody pulls up with something and we say, oh, yeah, that's not really good.
But can I say something for you? As I see it, those two properties, they have a hard time selling for one or another reason. In the last meeting, that somebody is ready to buy some portion of the Red Roof Inn. They are interested in them. Now, if they are interested in them, and if we put down a lot of restriction, what they can bring there and what they cannot, then this developer is going to back off. Right. When they back off, do you think we want to buy it? They're asking too much money. Mm-hmm. Do we have that kind of money to buy those people and then do our own project? We have to consider all those things.
Seems like we've got a lot of conversations ahead of us on this. Kelly, did you have anything else?
I do not. Thanks, Mayor.
Sherry, how about you? Captain Gearhart? Let's see, Jamie? Julie? Gordon?
I actually do. Mm-hmm. We were awarded a prestigious award. It's not a leg lamp or anything like that, but it is the Engineering Excellence Award for our roundabout project at Plainfield and Hunt.
That was from the Peppermill Neighborhood Association?
Is it round?
It is not round. It is actually, it's a octagon.
Octagon.
Stop. But it's close enough for traffic engineers. That's good.
Thank you.
Good job. Very good.
Good job.
Is that what it takes to get you in a suit?
Yeah, that's what it takes. And a free meal.
Brian.
I didn't want to be outdone, so I brought my far superior shaped award. It is a pointy sword-like, much more. Yeah, it's a rocket.
Monument.
Yeah. It's 5 years old, but just as important. And I didn't bring it to council 5 years ago, so I thought tonight would be a good opportunity. So it's for Summit Park. Ironically, it's because of all of Gordon's hard work over there. So I thought I'd go back. And, so, thank you.
Chris?
Who can follow that? I have nothing tonight, Mayor.
Jamie? Mr. Pacheco?
I'm ready to go rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff, how about you?
I have nothing.
Mark?
Nothing.
AJ? No? Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to say a few things. The wall on the entrance of Peppermill Lane and the roundabout looks great, and everybody's very, very happy. The wall looks excellent. They did a good job. So, good job for you.
Lee?
I was going to say, yes, it looks great. The other thing I had six scouts in here the other night and working on their government badge, and they really appreciated hearing all about what Blue Ash is about. And thanks to Roger, he gave him the $5 tour of the police department. It was only supposed to be a half hour. They were back there for a whole hour. I had to set a search party back there to find them. But I really appreciate that, and they really learned a lot. So thank you to everybody. So.
Brian?
I don't want to steal your thunder, but wanted to welcome and congratulate Gastro Health on their grand opening of the Blue Ash Endoscopy Center just today, and congratulations to all the members of the Citizens of Blue Ash Academy on their graduation tonight.
Katie?
Nothing tonight.
That was exactly what I was going to say, so thank you, Brian. All right. Well, I guess we're at the end of our time together. Could I have a motion for adjournment, please?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, everyone.
7:54.
Ooh.
I said 7:57, and I wrote it.